Welcome to Bravo Breakdowns, your podcast study guide for reality TV. Every Thursday, we cover an entire season of brawling, boozing, and romance, and skip all the boring parts where everyone is getting along. Whether you've never seen an episode or you're a Bravo scholar, we're here to break it down for you.
These girls are having a breakdown. Bravo Breakdowns. These girls are going insane now. Bravo Breakdown.
Kind of realized, I'm like, okay, I think these are the three tiers of like our top level reality performers.
Okay.
There are people who are genuinely cluster B personalities, like we always talk about.
Those are
top of the top because they are like not self-aware. They're unfiltered. They're acting probably the way that they wreaking the same havoc they do in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, your Vickies, your Lindsay Hubbards,
your early Stassi Schroeders,
Kristen Doty.
Yeah.
And then there's people, well, I would say Jax is in the different branch where it's someone who is kind of aware of the cameras and playing the game, but great. And Sheena's that too. Sheena, mm-hmm. Jax, Tamra. You know, people who are always looking for opportunities to cause trouble and stir the pot, and it just really comes naturally
Bethany.
To them. Bethany. And like, you can still like kind of tell when they're lying, but because they're so always in character, like as a reality TV person, you can't even imagine them like being normal. Like they only exist to work on reality TV.
Yeah.
Like they
can't
do
anything else.
No, Jackson, they're like
spray painting
his
head. When he tries to do something else, he's spray painting his head.
Exactly. Like when he's off camera, I think he just like shuts down and
gets divorced.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Even when he's on camera.
Then there's like everyone else, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I would put Teresa, like, I think also people who are really stupid
going
the cluster B.
What about like the Nene's? Like, because I think Nene was, she's not a cluster B. She's not like a Jax or Bethany.
Okay, then there's okay.
There's
I guess
Nene,
there's
but
divas.
She was great.
There's divas. There's egos. Yeah, and that's like Lisa Vanderpump, like where they are so driven by the urge to
and
look good
Nene.
On camera and make everyone else look bad.
Yeah.
I would say
Kenya,
that's Bethany. That's
R.A.P.
Bethany. Yeah. Luann.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But Ramona is cluster B.
Well,
and
Luann
Sonia
kind of is all three of those categories.
That's why she's so good.
I think all of the original Roni girls could hit all three categories.
That's why it's a magical show. Yeah.
At different times.
Yeah.
Shannon Sting, remember that from Potomac? What, like Karen's monologue?
Yes, it didn't make any sense. Yeah. It was like she was in a blackout.
Yeah, like you didn't like go to college. You were at Sing Sing.
Sing, Sing.
And
they're like, I'm sorry.
Busted whore.
And they're like, I'm sorry, what? And then she gives this look like, cheeky look like, I don't know.
I don't know what I just said, but I just insinuated that she's like a slut who was at Sing Sing, very famous prison.
I thought it was just she was so drunk that she was like not even, she was saying nonsense words like, and a manambo did the banana patch goo.
That's what I do when
I black out, actually.
Karen Huger is in the Nene Leakes Vanderpump.
Yes, diva.
Category.
Oh, the Grande Dame. And that's a lot of people's favorite, like,
my
strata.
My favorite thing about Karen, I think she's so top tier. Like, she's so good. Her doing that ad for, Surrey County, but not even going to Surrey County to do it. And then Andy asked her about that on Watch What Happens Live, and she just said, like, wherever I am, Surrey County is.
Surrey County is a state of mind.
Yeah, so wherever I am, that's where Surrey is.
And I was like, where my heart is. And that is Surrey County.
But I won't go there. She just shot it in, like, D.C., like, this park. And
oh, my God.
I just thought that was the greatest thing. But
much laxer advertisement laws in Maryland than
I would
California.
Never know about Surrey County, but now
that's
I
true.
Do. I want to go visit Karen Surrey County, which I think is just D.C.
Yeah, like a studio.
Bethesda, maybe. I don't know. Oh,
yeah, I want to visit where she and Giselle had lunch in the mime camp. Oh, it is. Oh, it is.
I took a liberty.
Okay, I think that we went in the same direction for this. Okay, let's get into it. So, good morning, students.
Good morning.
As you can see from our costumes, we have a very special episode tonight. So this is going to be, we're going to do something a little different. Instead of recapping 20 hours of television, we are going to give you a great episode for Housewives scholars and Bravo illiterate alike. That's right. Anyone can listen. And in fact, I think it would be a great episode to introduce to your friends so they learn about Bravo. It's a class for all levels. It's like yoga. So yeah, these are the top 10 Housewives dinners. For us.
Or lunches.
Or lunch. Well, I actually didn't know that we were going to be that lax, but yes, or lunches of all time.
We're also surprising each other.
Yes, we're trying to surprise each
other. I don't know Lauren's vibe, and she doesn't know my vibe.
But we both dressed like the day 3 of Miami and season 11 of Real Housewives of New York, a dinner we both love. I'm dressed like Tinsley when she says, oh, I'm drinking, Luann. As you can tell from the mismatched hoops.
And I'm dressed like
Bethany. She has the same dress as Bethany Frankel herself.
Is it
TJ Maxx?
My life for you, Luann. And Dennis is dead. He's dead.
Great performance. It seems like we just spoke a different language just then. If you're not a Housewives fan, this actually is, we are going to break everything down. It's a great primer for like, to show to friends, to get them to understand you and your sense of humor better. And also it's a great reminder for fans, even if you see a lot of like bad and cruel behavior on these shows, for the most part, it's not like just because they're monsters. This is the high camp art that they're always aspiring to make. This is like the canon. This is the like criterion, but cry spelled C-R-Y. This is great art and hilarious art that we're telling you about. And when they talk a bunch of shit about each other and, you know, out each other's secrets and all that stuff. You know, when Lala is mean about Ariana, the stuff they're doing, they're trying to ascend to this level.
Cancer or protecting a lover who is faking cancer.
Yes. They're trying to give us these 10 moments. Yeah. And if you're interested in looking up any of these dinners later, we will give you all the episode names. And when they are, they're all available on BravoTV.com or the Peacock app.
Yeah.
And most of them illegally on YouTube, where some of you might be watching this right now. All right, so starting off the countdown of 10 Housewives dinners with number 10.
Oh, Michelle, we're starting at 10?
Take it away.
Okay. Well, it's not a dinner. I took a liberty. I put Giselle and Karen, and the mime shows up. I thought it was like an early dinner, but
it was a lunch. It was kind of like, you know, afternoon.
It's hard to tell with those Potomac skies, but...
Yes.
What a great, whenever I need to watch great sketch comedy.
Yes, it's literally like an SNL sketch. Yeah,
so,
but funny.
Yeah, so the picture is Giselle and Karen are meeting for maybe a late lunch, maybe an early dinner. And Karen wants to come in hot at Giselle because she's upset about something and she needs Giselle to know. What they don't know is that Monique, who is also on the show, is planning a girls' trip to Paris, and the way she's getting everyone invitations is sending a mime to them. So the mime shows up while Karen is trying to yell at Giselle, and Giselle's like, I can't do it. You know, and Karen doesn't realize that the mime is behind her, so Giselle's like, this clown and that clown. And then Karen's like, I'm not talking about clowns. Like, you're the only clown, Giselle. You're the clown. He's like, and then Giselle's
no, literally.
Like, no, he's the clown.
In a glass box.
Karen like turns around, like sees there's this mime, and then he like climbs over the fence to get into the restaurant. And Karen's like, I'm not doing this right now with you or with you, Giselle. I just think it's like the timing is so perfect. Karen executes it perfectly, like going with the clown statement, and Giselle's just trying to explain to her what's actually happening in the moment.
It's a farce. It's a French farce.
And yes, it's a French farce. I'm trying to think of a famous French director right now, and I'm drawing
Godard. True, faux?
True or faux?
That's the name of the Housewives game.
Yeah. You know, Victor Hugo couldn't have written something like this powerful.
Oh, he wishes. He a hunchback wishes. Of Notre Dame. More and like the grand dame, Karen Huger, yelling at a mime.
And Karen brings out, like, Giselle's playful, funny side. I like them together. Remove Robin Dixon. We need to be focused on Giselle and Karen at all times because they're always making magic together.
Agree. And I think that, Potomac, the reason it's so good isn't because of, like, the drag her fight necessarily, or lots of histrionics. It's good because they're all, like, funny and playful and have a good rapport, much like Miami, you know?
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yes.
So that is
yes. That's why that show. Okay. Yeah. That's why that show was so good. Yeah. Yes, I'll tell you. It is season. It's season 3, episode 13 of Potomac. Which those early seasons of Potomac are
They're so good. Do you know what it's called? The episode. Mind your business.
Shut the fuck up.
So stupid.
I almost did the wig shift lunch, but I knew that was really a lunch.
Yeah. Yeah, this one you've got some room. Some shift.
That was so
iconic,
though.
Yeah. Okay, counting down to the number 9 housewife dinner of all time. So I chose this dinner. I feel like it almost encapsulates this podcast itself. So it's like the person who threw the dinner party was clearly going through something. And looking back, it's like a little sad. But she expressed her sadness through great art and being very drunk and made something hilarious we all can enjoy.
Wait, can I guess what it is?
Guess it.
Okay, is Sonia Morgan?
Let me tease it a little more. It's very funny. The theme of the party is even very funny. It was during a difficult time for the hostess, but she'd already planned this silly party. And
was
the
it
party...
East Coast or West Coast?
The
bottom? Franchise.
Bottom. South?
That would still be, are you talking Atlanta?
Yes. Is that
okay, that's still, I think it's East Coast, but yes. Okay, so it's Atlanta. Was it Nene's lingerie party?
Not lingerie party. This was, in fact, I am in fact talking about Nene's natural hair party, season 11, episode 16, entitled "By Wig, Hello Drama." So, I believe, and please tell me if I'm wrong, scholars, this was the first time that the Bravo editors used the flashing forward and then jumping back device, and also had a clock from right before the party when Nene gets bad news that her husband, who is now deceased, has to be readmitted into the hospital, is wearing a scarf and then starts drinking heavily as a guitarist sets up in her home and is dancing with herself, clearly fucking wasted at 4 p.m. before anyone comes over. Slowly people start to come in. We are still missing, however, Portia and Marlo, and Nene is
doesn't
not
like
pleased.
That, yeah.
No, even though Marlo has gone to great lengths to try to be a good friend to her.
And get a peach.
And she did for 1 year.
She did.
But she, like, Nene had told her about Greg going to the hospital. And so she came over to her house, but Nene didn't answer. So then she left and she couldn't miss her hair appointment. So then she had to go the next day to her hair appointment. And so Portia and Marlo were both late because they were finishing their hair appointment. And there was a lot of traffic on the way to Nene's house, which is far away in the rich people lands.
Mm-hmm.
And so Portia finally gets there. Nene is drunk and unhappy. And then Marlo gets there. Mm-hmm. And then Nene was very unhappy. She immediately is like, calls her a big motherfucking belt bitch.
Is there anything better than Nene activated, though?
It's so good. She really, she reminds me of, like, my friend from middle school.
Meryl
and
Street.
That she can strike into the insecurities at your very heart. Like, I feel
so
like
quickly.
My
it's so funny, and you're like, wait, do I laugh or do I
or cry?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then, yeah, she says, you can't come like 5 hours late. You're not Purple Rain, bitch. And it's also so funny. Like, all these, they like have their natural hair and it all looks great.
Yeah.
And the reason that Nene sent you through the party is she's like all of her enemies, like Kenya is like, says she has Donald Trump hair and they all think she's secretly
I got it. Is that what she is? I got the Trump check.
And she, like, but,
Cash
like,
intro, check.
Yeah. She has way more hair than me, but she has chosen to push it forward in a Donald Trump-like style.
Yeah.
So as a woman with thin hair, even though I don't experience systemic racism, I did really like the message of the party itself as well. And it was really funny. So yeah, it was, oh yeah. And then, Marlo is like, so Marlo is like in deep shit with Nene and she's like really trying to apologize. She's like, Nene, I pray for him every day. And Nene goes, don't do that. Like, not say anything. Right.
Oh God, I love her.
It was so good. And so then like finally they make up, like finally everything's okay. And then Shamari starts vomiting because everyone is so hammered, starts vomiting in the bathroom, vomits all over Eva's leg, which creates kind of a vomitorium where Eva almost vomits. And so
yeah,
then
it's like if you see somebody vomit, then you want to vomit. It's why Lauren and I, when we're together, we're very nauseous girls. We're always like having to share our Dramamines, our Imitrals with each other.
It's our sympathetic, like pregnancy, like like sympathy. It's like nausea sympathy.
Yeah.
Also, I think it was, she was grossed out because she had throw up all over her leg, too.
Yeah, it is a lot.
A combo.
It's a lot happening.
Yeah. But she manages not to throw up, and she goes down to tell Nene, who's, like, sitting, like, near her closet. And she's like, Nene, Shamari threw up all over my leg. And Nene goes, did it get on the bathroom floor? And, like, Eva's like, no, I'm saying, like, it got on my leg. She's like, no, I don't care. Did it get on my floor? And then also gives us the hilarious line and the talking head of, like, if the bathroom could talk, it would say, move me upstairs. So then, you know, Candy and Portia, they have always wanted to see Nene's closet. So they're like, let us come in. There. And Nene's like, no, I didn't have time. Do not go in there. It was like Blackbeard's, like, locked room with all of his dead wives. It's like, if you come in here, you will be cursed. But she's kind of like still laughing with him at first, and they're like, oh, pish posh. And then, you know, they go in the closet, and then a camera starts to go into the closet. Nene says, take my mic, throws off her mic, grabs a cameraman by the shirt, pulls him out of the closet, starts to grab Portia, and everyone's going, no, she's pregnant. And then Shamari's trying to leave, and she's like, I'm scared. I just want to get out of here. It's so good. It's so good. It's a work of art.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah. And that's why that's number 9 of the greatest housewives dinner of all time.
Okay. Number 8. I can't do Casey Kasem.
That's okay.
Number 8.
That's good.
It's the West Palm dinner.
Ah.
Real Housewives of New York season 9. Episode 18. I believe this was the Mexico trip. Am I remembering that right? Was it the Mexico?
I think so.
It was the Mexico trip.
Mexico. Yes. Epic shit show.
And it is the last dinner. They're talking about, they're going around talking about like their, the highlights and like their lowlights. And everyone's talking about like from the trip. But then it gets to Luann and she's talking about, she had just recently married Tom. And she was talking about, my pit or my, you know, my favorite thing would be my husband, Tom. And everyone's like, and Tinsley is hammered at this dinner. Actually, Bethany sees her drinking. She sees Tinsley drinking. And is like, I've never seen someone drink like this in my entire life. And this was the Mexico trip where they literally had gone to tequila and everyone got so drunk and tequila and they took helicopters. Mm-hmm. Remember, this is also when Ramona had done a skin peel, like her face peel.
Yes.
And she showed up to Mexico. She was like all red. Bethany had the flu.
Bethany was such a drag that trip.
Yeah, Bethany had the flu. Her and Ramona get in a fight. They end up hugging. And this is all during the trip. This isn't all the dinner. This is all like the span of like 4 days.
Yeah.
Carol's lying around. She's not really doing much. But anyway, back to the dinner. Because I quote it all the time. The West Palm. So Tinsley is so drunk and Luann won't shut the fuck up about Tom and how their life is so great together. And they go to Palm Beach and Palm Beach, Luann's talking about. And then drunk Tinsley is like, it's West Palm, Luann.
Such a read.
There's Palm Beach and there's West Palm. And she like does the like pantomime. I think it's good. There's West Palm, and then there's Palm Beach. There's a bridge that connects them. But make no mistake, West Palm is no Palm Beach. And then Bethany's like, oh, you know, she's talking about like social circles, blah, blah, blah. And then Luann, still drinking at this point, and says, oh, really? Palm Beach? You mean like the house that you live in with your mother?
Ooh.
So that was the first time I had ever heard about West Palm. Had you ever heard of West Palm before and how it's just pure trash compared to Palm Beach?
No, I don't think so. But as someone who grew up in University Park outside of Highland Park, I am familiar with this dichotomy.
Is there a bridge that connects the two?
No, they're like one like
make
encircles
no mistake.
The other.
Yeah,
there
make
is
no mistake.
75, I guess, in Preston.
But University Park is still pretty good.
Oh, it's still pretty. But I think West Palm Beach is still nice. It's not Palm Beach, though. Palm Beach is like ancient society. It's like Highland
Palm
Park.
Beach is, yeah, Palm Beach is where Mar-a-Lago is and where Tinsley's mom is. Where Tinsley
and, oh, have you seen that TikTok? People of Palm Beach? And it's all like near-old lady. Like, I'm wearing Chanel.
You've seen it because I've watched it on my TikTok and it shows
and it comes
up on
the feed.
On the TikTok that we share together. Yes.
Yeah.
That's why you've seen this. Yeah. And they're like 90-year-old women with like big diamonds, and they're like, oh, this is just Kate Spade and old Chanel.
Yeah.
And they're still like doing all the Botox and they're so tan.
Yes.
But make no mistake, they're not in West Palm. Actually,
no,
I think
ma'am.
Most of the time she's ambushed. This whoever's on that TikTok page that is ambushing the people of Palm Beach is usually in front of Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, you know? God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like at least she's having. Deserving victims.
Yeah, so it kind of reminded me of Gatsby, the two eggs. You know how I am with great classic American literature.
Mm-hmm. Any American literature with the word great in it,
yeah,
it's, you're all over
it. Anytime I can bring up Gatsby.
Yeah, the great Gatsby.
I forgot who wrote it. Was it Nicholas Sparks?
Nicholas Cage.
What a talent. He's a Coppola. Famously great writers. Anyway, the point is, in Gatsby, they talk about the two eggs. And so that's what I think of, like fallopian tubes.
Oh, yeah.
That's West Palm and Palm Beach.
So we beat on boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into West Palm Beach.
There's a bridge that connects the two. Once a month, you'll bleed.
Does he really describe a period like that in The Great Gatsby? It's been a long time since I
oh no he doesn't
it.
Talk about periods. He just talks about like two places in the city, like,
oh, like two
you
eggs.
Know
yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. The two eggs.
Mm-hmm. Two
it's
eggs.
It's been a long time since I had summer reading.
Me too.
Required summer reading.
I know, I only read like the
Lauren,
books
so
that you send
frame,
me
I'm gonna yeah
you only the book the celebrity memoirs of like Danielle Staub. So
for number seven of the greatest housewives dinners of all time, we've got a really special dinner. This was perhaps the most memorable part of an entire franchise.
It's the only part or episode of this entire franchise that I rewatch is this one that I think is worth rewatching. I think it was the whole reason the series continues, despite every other season being at least somewhat lackluster, and two, being used for evidence in a court investigation that is costing Bravo a lot of money. Actually, two court investigations, two lawsuits.
What is it? I don't remember. I don't know.
There have been a lot of fights at the Berkshires, but none so hilarious as the fight at the Red Lion of season 2, episode 5, Ultimate Wives Trip, The Ultimate Thirst. Now, girls trips.
We're doing ultimate girls trip. Yeah, this is. Yeah, they don't do those anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they might again. Well, I mean, it's half of them have resulted in huge lawsuits, but like,
and
when, you know,
they never released the show.
Yeah, but I still have hope. They can just come in. It's
Jason,
being
you that out.
Yeah. So Ultimate Girls Trip is like the all-stars of Housewives. So it's like you know,
Cluster B. This season was Cluster B.
The first season was like fan favorites because they wanted to like, oh, get the show started, and it was really boring. Other than
Melissa Gorga was on there. So it was fan favorites. Then plus Melissa Gorga was there. She's nobody's favorite.
Weirdly, a lot of people like her, which I don't understand.
I don't understand.
I don't get it.
It's like the Kyle thing.
Yeah. It's people who like boring people. Who try to look really good.
Okay, well, we like mental illness, so that's why we liked
season two. This was Ex-Wives Club. This was the bitterest women who walked back on Housewives so bad. This was every woman who threw a fight and like slapped a producer once she got fired. That's how they like cast it.
The only one we were missing though was Aviva.
She would pretend to be sick so she didn't have to go on the trip. She probably was invited.
Pictures of
my allergies. She'd have to bring Reed because she's flying on a plane. You know, her husband Aviva sucks. She's the girl who threw her leg, famously. Anyway, so they got back. So they did it all at the Berkshires during pandemic in October at Bluestone Manor, which is Dorinda, a former New York cast member's house. And it basically, Dorinda turned her manor into the house from The Shining, and she was Jack Nicholson, and truly terrorized everyone and proved herself the scariest one of these very scary women.
She made Tamra cry.
She made Tamra like didn't even get in any shit. She was just hiding from people. Yeah. Like she was scared.
Tamra was like, I'm actually scared. Like I'm trapped in this house. Like everyone's like, we are trapped. Like it's not like they're in the middle of like New York City and there's like all these other things to do and there's all like they're literally like on like 12 acres of land alone.
With Dorinda.
With Dorinda.
Who
has placed rules on this trip that she never placed on any of the seasons of Roni. Like, you have to walk around the house in socks or something.
You can't have food
in the rooms.
And then she gave them cupcakes in the rooms. Yeah. Like, very confusing rules.
It was so confusing. And this is literally, like, the house where, like, Ramona, remember she got drunk and she ripped down her wallpaper,
an awning, like a sconce, like just tore it apart, like, and then now suddenly if Tamra eats a cupcake that was left in her room, then then Dorinda fucking berates her, dude, like tears her new asshole. And Tamra's scary, she's a tough chick.
Tamra and Vicky are having. So do you want to say who's all at the on the this season? Tamra.
So this is Tamra from OC, Vicky from OC, who both were heartbroken when they were fired because they were on the series from very early on. Dorinda, who was Andy Cohen, was even so scared of that he just said she was put on pause and then offered to come back because he didn't want to have to deal with her killing him.
Also, this is the season where all of the other fired housewives have to tell Dorinda, you're not on pause, you were fired.
And then there's Jill Zarin.
Oh my God.
I gotta say, honestly, sidebar, has really turned a corner. She's pretty normal on this trip. And then on the goats I've been watching, she's been doing excellent in the competition and she's the most normal one.
Yeah.
There was a fight and she said, I'm just going to let these girls handle it. I don't want any part of it.
It's so disappointing.
But she was crazy on Below Deck. I guess it's like she really just turns it on. She's like, you know, Tiffany New York Pollard now. She just turns it on with the cameras when she needs to.
I like her a lot.
Yeah. Well, Tiffany also, like, we've never seen her not be.
I love New York. I watched her show. And the original Flavor of Love when she was came in second.
Yeah, we got to recap House of Villains. She's so good on it. Mm. Anyway, so then so we have Jill Zarin being like pretty normal. We've got Brandi Glanville, who we talked about earlier, unhinged,
drunk,
cluster B big time. And we have
Eva
from Atlanta, kind of boring, very beautiful. We have Phaedra, who's still kind of trying to be on her best behavior after being fired from Atlanta for spreading a life-ruining rumor about one of her castmates and their husbands. That it was so bad that even Bravo was like, I'm sorry, you can't come back. And they let Vicky come back after she faked cancer with her boyfriend. Yeah. It was that bad.
And this is before Bravo has to fire people for doing atrocious things. Like, when Bravo still let you stay for doing really
how bad it was.
Reprehensible things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then last...
I will say that Phaedra always had my... Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Cut.
Oh, no. Go for it. Phaedra always had what? Because I was going to...
Oh, I was going to say... Phaedra always had my favorite housewife tagline of all time, which is, only God can judge me, and he likes what he sees.
That's so good. Yeah.
Oh, no, she says, oh, and he is very impressed. That's what he said, and he is very impressed.
He's very impressed. So good. And yeah, that's the kind of Phaedra she's giving. She's just being really hilarious.
Motherly, but still pretending to be like a woman of God.
Mm-hmm. And then last, she does so little that it's almost not worth talking about her, but she is crucial in this particular fight. We have, oh my God, why do I keep wanting to say Tamara? We have Taylor Armstrong.
Oh, yeah.
So who has not really made a moment yet on the show, and she's determined to at this dinner. She's a Martinian. She's starting. Dorinda continues her reign of terror and brings all the ladies to the Red Lion, where she used to work. And she acts like a server and does her whole spiel to them. Because Dorinda's whole thing, especially this trip, is I'm the only one who works and has ever worked, despite being currently unemployed for the past 3 years.
20 years.
Yeah. The Housewives counts, though.
Well, okay, yeah, but yeah, we've had this discussion, yeah.
Yes, Housewives counts. But then, yeah, she, I think she had, a impressive, she was, a financial advisor or something, but she quit work when she married her second husband. Anyway, so it's just bizarre she has such a chip on her shoulder about this. Anyway, so she goes to the Red Lion, very drunk. She's like, server, can I get some blue cheese dressing on my salad? And they're like, we haven't had that in 10 years. And she's like, okay.
And then all the other housewives laugh at her.
Yeah. And so they are still waiting for dinner. They're so drunk and they've only had bread. It takes so long to serve
Who's
them.
The drunkest, though? Brandy.
Oh, I think Dorinda is drunker. Dorinda really, goes ape bit here.
So
first she rips into Vicky for no reason. She is like, I can't believe you took a nap because you're weak. I never nap. When Vicky had COVID,
also
and
Dorinda
still was shooting.
Dorinda famously
took a nap that day.
She talks about her first season of The Housewives that every day, 5 o'clock, she puts on her pajamas and takes a nap.
And yeah, and they confront her with that too. And she says, no, it's different. I nap to refuel. You nap to escape. She says to the woman, currently dying of a lung infection.
And then also, it is true that Tamara brings up in this season that every trip they have ever taken with Vicky, she has ended up in the hospital.
That's true, man. Every time.
By the way, Vicky and Tamara, two of one of the greatest housewives on this season, are having to share a futon. it's like they're on a pullout.
This is her power. Dorinda's power.
Running so scared, except Brandy.
Then she keeps tearing into her, and she's like, I mean, come on, it's a trip. It's 8 days. And Vicky goes,
Eight days?
I thought it was 5 days. And what?
And she's like, so I need to get sick now.
And then she's like, wait, what do you expect from me? I already went to urgent care. And Dorinda goes, you went to urgent care for a steroid shot, not a gunshot. She's such a gangster. She's such a old timey,
I know. She was in the movie Taxi. No.
Yes. Movie? I think it was a TV show. Taxi Driver?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We know stuff. References. We're not doing much with them, but we're making them. Then everyone's like, oh, Dorinda, you tore into Jill for no reason last night. What was that about? She's like, I'm tired. I had to take a nap because I was working. Jill, you remember working? What the fuck, you
Jill
bitch.
Has that fabric store that everyone buys rugs from still.
Well, I mean, but she never worked there. I mean, Jill hasn't,
it's worked called in a long Zarin. Time. But it's Zarin Fabrics.
But it's Bobby Zarin's, owns it. But I mean, she's all set, but get it's the hobby. Same as Brenda. Yeah, get a hobby, honey.
Yeah,
get a hobby. So then everyone's like trying to get, you know, they're like, oh, Dorinda, what were you screaming at Jill at for last night? So they get into it. And she was like still mad because when Dorinda was really drunk on the show and Jill did like a guest starring thing and like season 11, the dinner party where Leah threw the octopus, then or season 12, like Jill just had like a brief guest appearance and she was like, wow, she's really drunk. And so Dorinda's really mad about that because she's like, actually, I wasn't drunk. There wasn't even tequila there. And she's like, I was on a show. You were no longer on. And Jill's like, you're not on it. And she's like, I am on it. I'm on pause. It's different. You ruined the whole night. You were hysterical. Histrionics. Jealous. And then slowly everyone, you know, with their arms in the air, try to like explain to Dorinda, well, do you think on pause maybe means like, do you think maybe you're not coming back? Or she's like, no, it's different. I was on pause. And then Dorinda lights into Jill because she brought cameras to her husband's funeral. She invited the Bravo cameras, which is still kind of a
thing. She did not do that. So,
but here's what I think.
I think she did.
I think she did. But also, I think it's so much shittier of Dorinda to
talk about Bobby,
to throw that in her face like that. Bobby had Jill's side no matter what. At Scary Island, Bethany was like, well, clearly this is crazy and I'm sorry you're in the middle. And he's like, yeah, I'm not in the middle.
Everyone
loves my crazy wife trying to crash this party that a mentally insane woman just destroyed. Mm-hmm. I'm on my wife's side.
Yeah.
Like, and he would have wanted there to be cameras if that's what Jill wants.
Yeah.
Like, give her.
And by the way,
it was
the outside of it. They weren't like in the actual funeral.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was just outside. Yeah. Like, I just don't know why, like, it has to be this whole thing where it's like, you know, Bethany making an alliance with Jill and being like, oh, no, I believe her. And like, Bravo, like we said, the email, like, you know, I just like Bravo has the email from her assistant about the cameras. But it's like, who cares? Let her be happy. Like, her husband just died. So she wants cameras there.
And he was
like,
a huge part of the show. When she was on.
Everyone
really
loved
Bobby.
Tribute.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I just hate how Dorinda and everyone has, especially Dorinda though, has shamed Jill for that. So then things really take a turn when Taylor Armstrong decides she's starting to. This is her big chance. She's finally drunk enough to do some plot awkwardly as usual. And she says, Brandy, I still have an issue with you. And Brandy's like, what? And she's like, from season 3, which is like 10 years ago. Everyone's like, what? And she's like, you told my good friend, Adrian Maloof, you told on TV that she had a surrogate when she wasn't ready to tell her kids that. And I was like, I mean, it was a big deal at the time because it was bleeped out because the Maloofs were going to pursue legal action. So Brandy was like, what? You know, just because I said beep. And it was pretty much the whole plot that season. It was beeped every time. So it actually had the Streisand effect of like making people more interested in what happens. Mm-hmm. So more people figured out that she had a surrogate. I mean, it was shitty. And like at the time, once people figured that out, they were like, oh, that was shitty of Brandy. Because when it was bleeped, the Maloofs getting so pissed, they looked like assholes.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the season, we're like, okay, no, I get it. It's kind of like shitty.
It is shitty.
But also, Taylor looks like such a fucking asshole bringing up this from 10 years ago when, like, she's not hanging with Adrian Maloof at the Palms.
I know.
Not West Palm, not Palm Beach, not the Palms Casino
in Las Vegas. What is so funny, though, is Brandy is so drunk, and when Taylor's trying to confront her, Brandy, like, in her confessional, is like, all I see is that cat meme with Taylor. Like, remember this?
Yes. Yeah, I love that Brandy, like, terrible person, but she can pull off this season and like pretty much all of her season, like being a fan, but without being annoying.
Yeah.
Like being like, oh, no, I have watched it all. Like, I get it. I get when Jill comes in and says, hi, I know what that means. And it's like, she can like pull it off. Whereas the rest of, I think because the rest of them kind of like pretend they haven't. Or they're like, oh, like Heather Gay is like apologetic about it. Like, oh, I just love you guys. You guys are like the A team. You know, she's too like thirsty. Mm. Brandy at least like is chill.
And drunk.
Sometimes.
And really drunk.
She's
awful.
So drunk she can't feel fear.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. She's awful. Oh.
And so drunk that Taylor starts going off and like really not making sense. Like, you know, very you went to Sing Sing, like, not really, the words are not mixing well. She said, none of the rest, we had the best season. This, you ruined our show, Brandy.
Yeah.
We're the only ones with the Critics' Choice Award.
You made and it classless. Like,
what?
It's like, really? Like, your husband committed suicide.
Yeah, and that's what Brandy says.
Well, after Brandy Taylor. True.
After Taylor serves her with the epic burn, before we were like a really successful pot of water, and you were like a cinnamon stick that had to stir it all up.
Everyone's the like, metaphors for these fuck? Gals.
What are you talking about?
Because it's like listening to this podcast, and they're like, no, get two eggs, period. Period.
Yeah, we're so Taylor in that moment. And to which Brandy replies, how successful could it have been? Your husband killed himself. And they bleep her again. They bleep her again.
We're not laughing at the acts of that, okay? It is just, very serious.
And, yeah. And also, he was a problem. Even terrible men, you know, no one deserves kill himself. But he was a really bad guy. So it takes a little bit of the edge off.
But not when Brandy said it.
No, dinner. Everyone just goes, oh my God, and stands up. They're like, Phaedra's fanning herself. Everyone's like, what's with there?
Phaedra has a church fan. And he is very impressed.
He is very impressed.
So and then brings up the husband unaliving himself. But then the party starts to escalate.
Oh yeah, because then Dorinda is like, wait, I gotta get in this. Yeah, I can really solve this.
Yeah, well, watch this, Brady. Watch what I can say that with is the worst.
Her typical great Dorinda motherly advice, where she says, you should never be like that. You should be calm and blessful. I'm like, blessful?
What a mother hen.
So maternal. She's taking care of, really leveling with Brandy.
Blessful.
And she's like, Brandy, death is terrible. My husband died. Death is terrible. What do you imagine? What if it was your son who died? What if it was your son?
What if he was dead?
And then it's everyone's like, dead like... quiet. It's so much worse than the husband thing, because it's like, Brandy actually loves her son.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's got
like,
two of them. But yeah, she's like, oh yeah, what if my kids were dead, Dorinda? That's a good thing to say. And they still haven't, where's the food?
These ladies need food.
They need sustenance.
Yes.
Like, if only because, like, food, like, fuels your brain, and they could really use, like, some, like, something.
Calories, nutrients. Yeah. Yeah, the wheels turning. And so then Brandy, of course, like, tries to fight Dorinda, but then Jill and Phaedra walk her to the bar, and they're trying to talk her down. And she just goes to the bartender, and she goes, vodka. And the bartender just pours a glass of, no ice, into just a glass, not like a bar glass.
It looks like a glass of water.
A water glass.
It's just vodka.
Vodka. And she chugs it down, and then Phaedra's trying to calm her down, and she says, Brandy, what are you doing fighting with her? That woman could be your mama. And Brandy goes, she's actually 5 years older than me. And Phaedra goes, what?
And then Jill starts laughing. Phaedra's laughing. The bartender's laughing. And this is during COVID, so he's still wearing the mask. And he's just like,
that's like
trying to like pour another another glass of vodka for Brandy. And he's laughing hysterically.
Oh, so good.
Oh, it's magic. Movie magic. To me, this movie is cinema. Magic.
It is. And that's why Housewives is important.
Yeah.
Women's stories matter.
Listen to women and what they have to say about what if your kids were dead.
Yeah, believe women when they say what if your kids were dead.
What a thing to do when you're a host.
Yeah, and just to keep doubling down, everyone was like, okay, whoa, just apologize. She's going to hit you in the face. And she's like, no, it's just what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just what I'm saying. What if your kid is dead?
Yeah, it's just like, somebody get this woman the blue cheese salad. Like, she remembered from when she worked here when she was 16, and maybe she won't talk about children being dead.
Yes.
I would never forgive someone for being like, what if your daughter was dead? I'd be like, are you crazy?
Yeah. It's like, no, it's a metaphor.
For what?
Yeah, no, I got it. Like, what?
I get metaphors. Two eggs.
Two eggs.
One is West Palm and one is Palm Beach.
Let's keep these two, you know, American expatriate writer metaphors, okay? Civil.
Civil Shepherd.
That's the time of the night where we devolve into word association, folks.
I watched
this to be a two-parter, I think.
I know. I don't even know what number we're on, and I'm sober.
We're on five.
We're on six. I think we're on six.
We're on six. You're right.
It's gonna have to. Okay. Okay.
It's a two-parter.
Yeah, we're gonna have to. It's a two-parter. Yeah. Okay. So do you? Okay. I'm gonna. Which one?
So
do
this
you
is
gonna
be
to
our
do?
Last one. So because we have gone into so much detail with you about these dinners that we're so passionate about, we hope you had as much fun listening to them as we did telling them. This is going to be our last dinner of the night, and we'll give you the top five in next week's episode, or even maybe a little mini-sode. Jill? Nope, your name is not Jill. What the fuck?
But I do have the nose. I will... No, Jason, leave that in, where Lori can't remember her best friend's name. Which brings me to number six, but really on my list, it's probably, like, number one, but I just need to talk about it, because we've never talked about it. And it's probably... was the scene that put Housewives, where I feel like Housewives really became like a cultural phenomenon where everyone talked about it. I already know what it is.
Goosebumps. Me too. And this is perfect because this is my number five. So here we go.
You own a part of this history because I had
it. I do. A huge prop in this history.
Let me set the scene. Let me set the dinner table for you. Yeah. The Last Supper, if you will, before the world changed. This is the Last Supper.
That is also the episode name, The Last Supper.
And this is
and
not
it is
hyperbole.
Season one, episode seven of The Real Housewives of New Jersey.
A book has come out. Well, a book has been out that nobody has ever read. We find out that Danielle Staub is who this book was written about under a different name. They did not use her real name, Danielle Staub. And nobody likes Danielle. The book is titled Cop Without a Badge.
Beverly. I remember. Beverly.
Did you actually read Cop Without a Badge?
No, but they do it later when Danielle comes back to trigger her.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my god. Up. Yeah, no, all like the first few seasons, the first five seasons of Jersey are just a trigger warning if you have any family issues.
Yes.
Actually still.
Yeah. They really
But this dinner scene, Teresa didn't have any of her family intruding like Melissa or Kathy Wachili.
A simpler time.
It was a simpler time. Mm-hmm. She was still with her ex-husband Joe Giudice, Juicy Joe. So this Juicy Joe, Caroline Manzo, her sons are there, Dina's there, Teresa's there. It was before she had her boobies done and she was still rocking her natural curls. And Teresa is so incensed about this book, Cop Without a Badge, which you know she has never read a single word of. You know that none of the women on the show read it, that people just gave them the, like, spark notes. Probably the producers were like...
Yeah.
So Teresa's like, I need to bring up the parts of this book that are really triggering me right now. And she's like, it starts off slow. It's like a crescendo, right? Where it's like... starts off quiet and then it gets
loud. Well, first, what triggers it is, of course, for every great hero, there has to be a great villain.
Mm.
Is Danielle Staub herself is acting like she's the victim in all this, that the book was found. Mm-hmm. She's so good at making herself the victim at the women being troubled because they found out there's a book about her where she kidnapped a girl and held her hostage and had like a ton of illegal guns before getting arrested. So they're like, some reason.
Yeah, but that's
a long time ago.
Teresa's like really getting upset about here. It is.
Teresa did not latch on to that part.
No.
But the fact that Danielle lays the book on the table in the middle of a nice civil dinner, just lays the book on the table like, oh, so you guys wanted to talk about it. Now we can talk about it.
And Teresa's like... attention. I'm gonna check things out. This is what Danielle says to Teresa before Teresa. The table is completely flipped. She's like, pay attention. There's only two things in this book that are true. And then she tells Teresa what's true. And, engaged 19 times? Prostitution home?
Pay attention.
Flips
police.
The table. Police. Pay attention.
She does. I mean, like, it's like a poem. What? The way she's chanting it, like, Rupai Kaur could never.
Oh,
prostitution,
yeah.
Whore, engage 19 times.
Engage 19 times.
Prostitution, whore, engage
19 times. Engage 19 times. Prostitution, whore, engage 19 times.
And just, like, prostitution. And also just, like, what a wordsmith. Mm. Like, you know, she's like Teresa's like Tony Soprano.
Oh.
Like, prostitution, whore. Those are the most beautiful two words in the English language. It's not cellar door.
No.
It's prostitution, whore.
Whore. And now we said it.
And now we said it.
But we have not read it. We said it. Say it.
I try.
Write it.
Write it. Regret it.
So say it. I don't know. The point is, no one at this table acts shocked by what they've seen.
They're completely.
Yeah, not all the confessions.
They're like Italians.
Like, even the Manzo, like, sons are like 15 when this happens. They're like, oh, yeah, it's just a New Jersey table flip.
Yeah, they're like, oh, the table flip. The LA handshake.
And,
yeah.
Like, Lucy Joe has to be like, come on, Teresa. So you can't flip the table right now. And then she's like, am I pretty, Joe? He's like, yeah, baby. And then she's like, I love you. And they, like, make out. And there's, like, debris everywhere. You know, these waiters have to come and, like, unflip a table.
Yeah, I remember
Caroline
watching that episode
so hard. I mean, it's
so good.
It's so cinematic.
I remember when I watched it when it aired on my birthday, by the
oh
way,
my
20th birthday.
That's so special.
It was such a gift to me to hear prostitution whore. Sure. Like, I was like, I'd already liked Housewives and watched Housewives, but that's when I was all in with Jersey.
Prostitution whore.
So
engaged 19 times. Not you kidnapped somebody.
Yeah, that would be my big takeaway. Also, like, I think what's so special about that table flip, which also some scholars quibble with it, and they say, not a flip, it was a jostle. It was a lift and a jostle, because it didn't flip. But I'm like, how is the Jersey table flip usually someone turning the whole thing? Oh, she's at 90 pounds.
It was like a very big table.
Yes,
I'm defending.
She was at the head.
Yes, she was the head of the table, and she had to tell that nasty. They talk about the rumors, the nastiness about Danielle. Oh my God, that didn't make my list. But that really should
I know be. It was close for me. Okay, so I just wanted to say one last thing that's important about number five before we sign off and give you five more next week. Number six.
Six.
Sorry. I just have one more important thing to say about number six. We cannot count or know each other's names, but we're describing the fuck out of these episodes. Or no references.
Yeah, my word
anything.
Is chill. I mean, it was chill today. This is how Lauren, but this is actually good for people to know. Like, this is how Lauren and I actually talk to each other.
Yes.
We don't address each other correctly most of the time, and we talk in, we script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just script Housewives episodes.
All
we
the
talk
time.
In Housewives references.
But they will make sense some of the time to what we're really talking about. Like, if we
yes.
have to go downstairs, we'll say, like, the lower level.
The lower level. Right.
Yeah.
The fish room.
The fish room. That's when we go get sushi, which we've never done.
Never done that.
We
no,
don't.
It's expensive.
We just we go to Hooters and we get shrimp.
Yeah.
The fish room.
That's
what we call
the
fish
room.
Because
all the ladies are fish there, honey. Okay, one more thing about Teresa. Okay, so I think also what was so important about the table flip was not only that it was the kind of explosive drama that defined Jersey, but also it was like Dina was supposed to be kind of the center of the show,
yeah.
the glue of the show, sort of like how Courtney Cox was supposed to be the star of Friends.
Oh, no.
And Gina Keough was supposed to be the star of The O.C. But then suddenly in Friends,
star
Jennifer Aniston emerged. Rachel. Rachel was the star. She had the haircut. And then in OC, Vicky emerged. Vicky was the star. She said, I don't want to get old, and like cried a lot. And
oh
had
my
a
God.
Time.
So funny.
And this is when Teresa emerged and in fact was such great TV that they mined anyone with a bit of her DNA and brought them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone she'd ever met before.
Mm-hmm.
People she used to know in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I'm sorry, the Teresa show now. It might be running out of steam, but I hope,
she's
I pray for the
future. She's given us so many good years.
I'm grateful. I'm grateful
for all the years that she said that Melissa was a stripper and she can prove it, but never did. You know, so Teresa's telling the world, like, I also have a prostitution whore in my family, and I don't like her cookies, honey. I threw them sprinkles in the trash. That's a different scene, but that's like another Teresa. She famously threw Melissa's sprinkle cookies in the trash.
Because
you know what kind of cookie she likes? Pignoles.
Because she's so Italian.
Yeah.
No one's Italian enough for her brother.
Yeah, well, no one's flipped a table since.
I know. Well, that's really, I feel like,
they tried at the christening, but they flipped children.
Babies just flipping.
Baby. Oh, reminds me, I want to watch that movie, Look Who's Talking. Remember that?
Baby is a classic. Yeah. Baby's talking. Bye.
Bye.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Follow us on TikTok. Follow us on Instagram. Bravo_breakdowns for both. Check out our Traitors UK season 2 recap if you haven't yet, with special guest Sinisterhood. Christy and Heather were nice enough to do our podcast and they were super funny and we break down the whole season for you. Please check out our YouTube if you're not already watching it. If you are, thank you. Like and subscribe. Yes, I'm drinking, Luann.
These girls are having a breakdown. Bravo breakdowns. These girls are going insane now. Bravo.